but there were so many schisms going on that no one would stand still long enough to listen. The hammering of clerics as they nailed their own versions of the truth of Om on the temple doors was deafening, and for a brief while he'd even contemplated buying a roll of paper and a hammer of his own and putting his name on the waiting list for the doors. But he'd overruled himself, because he was, he knew, in two minds about everything. At one point he'd considered asking to be exorcised, but had drawn back from this because the church traditionally used fairly terminal methods for this, and in any case, serious men who seldom smiled would not be amused to hear that the invasive spirit he wanted exorcised was his own. He called the voices the good oats and the bad oats. The trouble was, each of them agreed with the terminology but applied it in different ways. Even when he was small, there'd been a part of him that thought the temple was a silly, boring place, and tried to make him laugh when he was supposed to be listening to sermons. It had grown up with him. It was the oats that read avidly and always remembered those passages which cast doubt on the literal truth of the Book of Om, and nudged him and said, "If this isn't true, what can you believe?" And the other half of him would say, "There must be other kinds of truth." And he'd reply, "Other kinds than the kind that is actually true, you mean?" And he'd say, "Define actually." And he'd shout, "Well, actually, Omnians would have tortured you to death not long ago for even thinking like this. Remember that? Remember how many died for using the brain which you seem to think their god gave them? What kind of truth excuses all that pain?" He'd never quite worked out how to put the answer into words, and then the headaches would start and the sleepless nights. The church schismed all the time these days, and this was surely the ultimate one, starting a war inside one's head. To think he'd been sent here for his health, because Brother Melchior had got worried about his shaky hands and the way he talked to himself. He did not gird his loins, because he wasn't certain how you did that and had never dared ask. But he adjusted his hat and stepped out into the wild night under the thick, uncommunicative clouds. The castle gate swung open, and Count Magpier stepped out, flanked by his soldiers. This was not according to the proper narrative tradition. Although the people of Lancre were technically new to all this, down at genetic level they knew that when the mob is at the gate, the mobee should be screaming defiance in a burning laboratory, or engaged in a cliffhanger struggle with some hero on the battlements. He shouldn't be lighting a cigar. They fell silent, scythes and pitchforks hovering in mid-shake. The only sound was the crackling of the torches. The Count blew a smoke ring. "Good evening," he said, as it drifted away. "You must be the mob." Someone at the back of the crowd, who hadn't been keeping up to date, threw a stone. Count Magpier caught it without looking. "The pitchforks are good," he said. "I like the pitchforks. As pitchforks, they certainly pass muster. And the torches, well, that goes without saying. But the scythes, no, I'm afraid not. They simply will not do. Not a good mob weapon, I have to tell you. Take it from me. A simple sickle is much better. Start waving scythes around and someone could lose an ear. Do try to learn." He ambled over to a very large man who was holding a pitchfork. "And what is your name, young man?"
Jason Ogg, sir."
"The blacksmith?"
"Yes, sir."
"Wife and family doing well?"
"Yes, sir."
"Well done. Got everything you need?"
Yes, sir."
"Good man. Carry on. If you keep the noise down over dinner, I would be grateful, but of course I appreciate you have a vital traditional role to play. I'll have the servants bring out some mugs of hot toddy shortly." He knocked the ash off his cigar. "Oh, and may I introduce you to Sergeant Crapput, known to his friends as Bent Bill, I believe. And this gentleman here, picking at his teeth with his knife, is Corporal Svitz, who I understand has no friends at all. I suppose it is faintly possible that he will make some here. They and their men, who I suppose could be called soldiers in a sort of informal, easy-come, easy-go, cut-and-thrust sort of way..." Here Corporal Svitz leered and flicked a gobbet of anonymous rations from a yellowing molar. "We'll be going on duty in, about an hour. Purely for reasons of security, you understand?"
"And then we'll gut you like a clam and stuff you with straw," said Corporal Svitz.
"Ah, this is technical..."